Hey, it's Mike from Go Cell Phone Repair, and this is the audio from a live stream I did on YouTube on Monday. So if you want to check that out, it is on my channel, youtube.com/GoCellPhoneRepair. And of course, you can also find me the same way on Facebook, Twitter, shoot me a tweet at FixMyCellPhone. And I got started a little late on this one, so I kind of missed just the first minute or so, but it wasn't a big deal. I was just talking about a lens pen, which is an awesome tool if you're cleaning up iPad screens, LCDs. So I hope you enjoy the podcast, and I do look forward to your comments and questions. And again, if you want to join me, I will announce the next live stream a couple days before it happens. I'm not sure if we're going to do it next Monday because I may be teaching some people how to fix phones. But outside of that, once a month. Normally, I'll be doing the live stream every Monday. So, except for that one Monday per month when I have to work in store. So, for the podcast, this is where we're going to start out, but it makes a lot more sense because really, during the audio version of this, you can't see what I'm doing anyway. So, on the list today, there were a couple things that I want to talk about. As soon as my scroller goes across here, they will remind me of what those are. But meanwhile, I want to kind of check. It looks like we are streaming. We have some people in the chat. Hello, dear. So, again, what is hello, dear, if you aren't already familiar? There is a language barrier a lot of times when we order parts, and it's kind of funny. I mean, it's entertaining, and don't take this as I'm laughing at people. I'm just laughing at the differences that we have when it comes to translating language, because if you've ever tried this before, you go to Google Translate, and it can make a mess of what you're trying to say. You know, I've translated things to other languages, let people look at them, and they're like, this doesn't make any sense. I would, you know, why would you say that to me? Well, when I get the solicitations from vendors, for some reason in China, and I think it's Mandarin, I may be wrong about that, but for some reason on a lot of their greetings in the emails that they send, they will double up on the opening to that greeting. So, you know, you might say in an email, hello, how are you doing? You know, here's our product and here's my company. Or you might say, dear so-and-so, if anybody remembers back in the old days when people actually corresponded through written communications, that you would say, dear Mike, or dear Jennifer, or dear whoever at the beginning of your letter. Well, those greetings are apparently getting stacked up on top of each other. So it's kind of funny because a lot of the emails that I get from China now say, hello, dear. And then there's a comment, it goes into the body of the message. And that's kind of the tip of the iceberg. But it's funny, and it's kind of become a thing, just kind of an inside joke for people who do phone repair, is that I got another hello, dear email this morning. So it's very obvious, you know, what the rest of the body of that letter is going to be. It's going to be a sales pitch, and it's going to be coming from the manufacturer in China. But it is entertaining. So I don't know if anyone has already heard about this, but I thought it would be interesting. I'm going to switch over to the browser here, hopefully, and you tell me, where are we? I think we need to go here. So this is interesting. FedEx apparently is looking at, or is currently, according to this, doing some work with Samsung where they are fixing Galaxy phones at FedEx locations, or at least one location. This one is in New York, New York, Lexington Avenue, and they will repair your screen device speed. I don't know what that means. They're probably trying to sell an optimization or something like people often do with laptops, computers. Accessory setup, what does that even mean? Audio troubleshooting, power charging, and battery. And they're supporting the Galaxy S7, S7 Edge, 6S Edge Plus, and the Galaxy Note 5. So this is really interesting for a couple of reasons. One being that if you've worked on any of these Galaxy models lately, you already know that they are not always the easiest repairs to do. I'm not saying that they're difficult, but they are prone to a lot more problems afterwards than something like an iPhone screen would typically be. So the fact that these guys are jumping in the first place is interesting, and it's kind of the same reaction I had to some other nationwide chains that are offering phone repair in their locations. You know, number one, it's going to be difficult to find someone that you can quickly train and pay at something like minimum wage, obviously, to go in. And I assume maybe their techs get paid a little bit more, but they're not going to have the history of experience with these devices. And what happens when they run into a serious problem, or they destroy someone's phone, or, you know, something else goes wrong? The advantage, I think, for these companies would be that obviously if they're dealing directly with Samsung, they'll probably be able to get much better pricing. They'll be able to get OEM parts, And a few years ago, I know someone who looked into this, and apparently when it comes to dealing directly with the manufacturer for the parts, obviously it varies from one brand to another, but at the time, Samsung wanted something like $25,000 or $50,000 a month minimum order. And obviously that is going to put a lot of people out of the, you know, the ballpark for that, unless they kind of got together and pooled on their resources to make that happen. I want to check the chat because I know there's a few people watching and I just want to make sure that we actually have a functional chat today. So let me put this up and make sure it's actually going through the stream. Let's see, where are we? And oh, and I gotta keep reminding myself there's quite a bit of a delay here. So if you make a comment, okay, so my comment went through. If someone wants to do me a favor, throw a comment up there. I just want to make sure that that functionality is working or that you can read my comments and vice versa. There's quite a bit of a delay here. So I'm gonna slow down a bit today so that if anyone has a comment on a topic that we're currently discussing, that I don't get too far out ahead and talk about something else completely different. Samsung and FedEx. Now, here was another one that I just recently came across, and apparently this has been going on for a while. Samsung also has something called SamsungCareTruck.com, and this thing looks like, I don't know, an old converted SWAT van or something, and I don't know exactly what they do. You know, it says screen replacement device setup. Again, not sure what that means unless maybe someone is buying their first smartphone, and they have a few locations around in and or about New York. So Union Square, Times Square, Soho, Herald Square, and so forth, Grand Central. So that's kind of interesting. I'm on the other side of the country, so I can't go in and get firsthand experience, but I am interested to hear how this works. You know, do you just walk in and they fix your screen? Are they backing up your data for you? What's the customer experience like? And what's the availability on these things? Do they have the parts right then and there and they just make it happen? No idea. Okay, I don't see anything on the live chat, so I hope that I've got the right chat. I would have to, right, if I'm getting a comment here. Oh, and by the way, someone else also mentioned to me that you cannot comment if you're not logged into YouTube. That kind of sucks. Oh, hi, Sergio. Thank you. I wanted to just make sure that that was working. Last week, we had quite a few people on the live stream, but they weren't commenting, apparently, because you have to log into YouTube, and I know that's kind of lame, but it does help control spam. So, you know, worst case scenario, you could quickly create a dummy Gmail account, then you'll be able to log in, you can comment if you want to. So I know it takes a few minutes, and it's kind of a pain now, but hopefully not too much work, at least if you want to participate. So Samsung Caravan, I don't know, this is really weird to me because, you know, one of the things about the Apple stores that we already know is that it creates a challenge for that company because what they're trying to do is say, hey, we'll fix your phone for you, but obviously not everyone lives close to an Apple store. And that's just one of the reasons that going to Apple to get your screen or anything else on your phone fixed is not going to be an option for everyone. You know, we have quite a few customers that come in, they can't make an appointment, you know, up to 2 or 3 weeks out and wait for their phone to be fixed. They don't want to put it into the mail to ship it. And it's one of the reasons that I still think that for the next few years, we're not going to have to worry too much about not having any customers. And this is always, you know, in this industry, the sky is always falling, as it is, I think, in a lot of different industries. You know, I'd be more worried right now if I was going to be replaced by a self-driving car. To me, that's a much bigger threat to any single industry than Apple or Samsung or any other company opening up a store where they're going to service their customers for repairs, because it's just not going to, they're not going to be able to do the same things that we do, obviously. And at the same time, I always tell people, look to the future. You know, what are you going to do next? You don't want to have just one specialty, because if you do, when and if that opportunity goes away, what do you have to fall back on? You know, we have expanded into game console and laptop repair. I'm sure that we're going to be working on VR equipment, drones, that kind of thing. Obviously, accessory sales are a big chunk of what you can do to supplement your earnings. So if you're looking at this from the perspective of, hey, I'm just going to fix iPhone screens and that's all I'm going to do, those are the areas of this industry that I would be concerned about, because if that opportunity goes away and you don't have anything else to fall back on, it's going to be tough, or you're going to have to move or expand into something else. So right now, I really believe is the time to hone your skills and start looking at the more advanced repairs, so that when and if that time comes, you'll be prepared and you'll have something else that you can do that will be viable. There was, I want to get into this no fix, no fee thing momentarily. That's kind of a big subject. But before I do that, there was one more news thing here that I wanted to pull up on the browser. This is kind of crazy. If you haven't already seen this, it is on, let's see, where is it? It's the interobang.com. Anyways, if you Google this for, what was the title again? Chick robs cell phone store with machine gun. I think it's interesting that they said chick. I didn't even know that was like a term anymore. But there is a video on this, and I don't know if I'm really, if it's okay for me to play this or not. I hope it is. I mean, it is on a new site. This should be covered by fair use. If it's not, I'll find out because YouTube will pull my video, but I hope they don't. But you have to see, this lady walks in, no mask, some sort of automatic rifle, and just takes whatever it is that she wanted off the counter and walks out of the store. This is in North Carolina. She brandished an assault-style rifle and demanded cell phones from the clerk. It looks like she took like one phone, so I don't know what this is about. I'd love to hear the details, but you have to assume that, I don't know, look at, there's a clear shot of her face too, or a relatively clear shot of her face. Okay, so that came from the New York Post. So if you want to see more of that, you can check that out at the New York Post. What are people thinking when you just walk into a store? Obviously, there are cameras. I'm suspecting drugs or something else are involved because that's just a blip. Unless this is some sort of publicity thing. Now, there's another possibility, and that's the way that news tends to work these days, right? Is a lot of this stuff is not really happening, but people are setting it up to make it look like it happens. But I'm pretty sure if you stage a crime like that and you release it to media outlets and the authorities get involved, there's probably going to be some liability for a person that sets that up. So that would lead me to believe that this actually happened and that this lady is out of her mind. Let's see. So, oh, hold on one second here. There was one last thing here, and this is kind of an old one, but I did want to bring it up because I stumbled upon it again. And I thought, if you want to get shot, then here's a great way to do it. If you haven't seen this already, this is a cell phone case that has the handle of a gun attached to it. And what reminded me of this was the lady with the automatic rifle. If you are walking around with this, do not be surprised if you have guns drawn on you. This is insane. And they're saying, you know, this is being discouraged, obviously, by law enforcement and probably anyone else with a brain. You know, nowadays, you really don't want anyone to have doubts about your intentions, especially when they think that you might be carrying a firearm. So this is just not a good idea, I think. I don't know. What would you do? All right. So I think we're deep enough into the chat here. I am always open to questions and comments. One of the topics I did kind of want to cover today was the no fix, no fee term. So I've had this discussion many times with people who I've trained for phone repair, for other technicians, for other business owners. And now my dog is going to start barking right in the middle of this. Last time he did it 5 minutes in. Today he is doing it a little further along. So I'm going to give him a second and see if he stops, and then I'm going to probably have to answer the door. So no fix, no fee is a term that is being used for advertising or for, you know, kind of a policy thing that people state to their customers. You know, hey, I've got this problem with my phone. How much is it going to cost me? And the response from some businesses is, well, here's the cost if we can perform the repair. And if we can't, we don't charge you anything. So obviously the easiest way to say that, and I'm all for boiling things down to something that's very simple to communicate, you know, to your customer, is no fix, no fee. You know, if you send this in or if you bring it to our store and we work on it and we can't fix it, then you don't pay anything. And I wish it were as simple as saying, I'm in favor of that or I'm against that. And every time I engage in this conversation, I get people all over the place, you know, saying, well, you know, you have one side that says, hey, my time is worth money, so I should be compensated anytime I invest time into a repair or anything else, any sort of labor. And then you have another side that says, well, that's not good for customers because then you put your, you know, you put someone in a position where they're basically taking a risk. So they don't know, you know, it's like, you're going to gamble right now. You're going to pay me X amount of money. But if I can't perform the repair, you're still on the hook for that minimum fee, whatever that, if you want to call it a bench fee or a diagnostic fee or whatever else that is going to be. So this was a hot topic for a while. And I think at some point, most of us just kind of came to the conclusion that we're going to decide on our own. And that's why I'm here. You know, I am absolutely not going to tell anyone what they should do. And I am also kind of I'm on both sides of it. Alien fix. Yeah, I agree that it's not good for customers to be in that position where they really don't know what's going to happen 100%. And this is one of the things where you can't have a black and white, I don't think, on a lot of these arguments, you know, because you will have to choose a side. You know, you'll have to say, well, we have a no fix, no fee policy, or we don't have a no fix, no fee policy. We have a bench fee, or you fall somewhere in between. And personally, again, this is just my opinion, but I think it makes sense to say, well, there are some factors that go into making that decision. So the big advantage is if you say no fix, no fee, people get excited. And I mean, what customer wants to hear, this guy on this side of the street is going to charge me a minimum fee no matter what. And this other person says, if they can't fix it, I don't pay anything. Well, most people are going to immediately go to the lowest option, right? And we know that that's not always the best option for them. But if you have someone who's very good at what they do and someone who just, you know, is a hack basically, or they don't know anything about phone repair and they're, you know, doing really basic stuff, if that person who's willing to work for a no fix, no fee policy, that's different than going to a highly skilled professional or someone who has a lot of experience and has been doing this for a long time and has a very high success rate. If that person says no fix, no fee, I feel much more confident than I do going to someone off the street that I don't know anything about, that could be a complete amateur. The problem, of course, is we really don't have, at least in my state or my country, we don't have any minimum requirement other than in California, you have to pay the state a fee in order to work on electronics, but they don't require any sort of certification. There is no review board, no panel, no test. It's just a matter of if you can get a business license and open up shop and you have the equipment on hand, you can go into the phone repair business. And that creates a problem for a lot of people because that's where this whole gray area comes in. You know, you go to two different places and if they both have no fix, no fee, one of them might be, we don't know what we're doing. We're going to make your phone even worse than what you came in with. And now here you go. Here's your phone back. No fee, you know, no fix, no fee. Well, if that phone then goes to someone who actually knows what they're doing and they look inside and they see, oh, you know, the solution for this, you know, company A was to take a heat gun and just boil this thing, you know, get it as hot as they could, hoping that they were going to, magically reflow some connection underneath an integrated circuit. And, you know, meanwhile, they melted all sorts of other stuff and blew chips off the board and everything else. Well, that puts you in a more difficult position. And it also puts you in a position where you take the phone. And I already know this is happening, like not that someone has confirmed it, but I can imagine because I've tried to look at both sides of this issue. The person who then gets the phone, who is qualified to perform the repair or would have been, you know, had they gotten the phone first, opens up the phone, looks inside and says, this is a big mess. I'm not going to work on it. So that's how you maintain your no fix, no fee, because obviously you can't invest a huge amount of time into pursuing repairs that can never be performed. I totally understand that and it makes sense. At the same time, we have to ask ourselves two questions. And one of those questions is going to be, if you are working for free, because at some point you will invest your time and energy and possibly some parts into something that you can't fix, right? So if you invest your time into a repair that can't be performed, you are not being compensated monetarily. And again, I'm not going to call a judgment on this right or wrong. I'm just saying, here's what's actually happening. You know, you're going to do one of two things. You are either working for free, so you're performing that labor at no charge to anyone, which means your bottom line is going to be less. And what does that mean exactly? You know, and this is why I wanted to title this, What Happens When You Give a Discount? When you give a discount and you lower the cost that someone is paying you for a repair or for a diagnosis or a bench fee or anything else, you know, anything along those lines, you're saying that I am going to invest this amount of time at no charge for this customer. So one of two things happens. One, you know, number one would be you make less money. So you are taking money out of your pocket and saying, well, I am willing to earn less. I'm willing for my net profit to be less than it is because I want to be able to have this policy of offering a discount or having a no fix, no fee policy or whatever. And that's fine if you are satisfied with the amount of profit that you're generating. But I suspect strongly that in many cases, what is really happening is that the same thing that happens in the business world, and that is all of the costs that are associated with you investing your time into that repair where you're not going to profit, is going to be spread out evenly over the rest of your customers that come into the store. So if you take something like a grocery store or a clothing store, you know, any retail environment, there is a certain amount of what they call shrinkage. And that means when customers come into the store and they leave the store at the end of the month or whenever their inventory period ends, they go in and they count up all the merchandise they have and they realize that some of it's not there and cannot be accounted for. So they have to write off a certain loss, and that can be shoplifters, it can be internal theft, it can be spoilage, it can be all sorts of different things. But they don't just say, well, we're just going to make less money this year and we're going to give our stockholders less profit. What they do is they say, we have to compensate for those losses. So in order to do so, we're going to raise the price of macaroni and cheese by 3 cents, you know, or something along those lines. There is some way to offset those losses. Most businesses don't just say, well, I'm just willing to have less money now, you know, because they have overhead that they're paying. They have employees, they have electricity, they have merchandise, they have inventory, they have all these things that have these constant expenses that are going on. And then hopefully at the end of the day, they're taking home some money so that they can feed their family also. So when they decide what that number is that they are willing to work for, you know, this is an acceptable profit for my business. When something else comes into that equation and takes away from that number at the end, there's got to be a way to make up for it. And there are only two ways to do that. One is to cut on expenses, and the other one is to pass that cost on to their customers. So my question to anyone, and this is a legitimate question, and I'm not here to argue, I'm just curious, you know, if you have a no fix, no fee policy, how do you absorb the losses that you take for the time that you work for free? And also, if someone comes into, and I run into this, you know, every other day practically, someone comes into the store and asks for a discount, often, you know, without any reason, without any rhyme or reason to the whole thing. It's just, oh, this repair is this much. Well, can you do it for less? Well, you know, if I could do it for less and that was acceptable for me, then I would price it at a lower price point, you know. And there is a perception, I think, number one, is that if you have a small business or you are an independent business and you're not part of some big corporation, that you have some flexibility in your pricing. And we know that when we see a very competitive market, that if someone down the street is doing something for, you know, a lower price, even if it's $5 less than you, then you have to either say, well, we'll match that price, because price matching is a thing. You know, it goes on, again, in big companies. You walk into Best Buy, or you walk into Walmart, or you walk into any company that just has this, you know, billions of dollars of revenue, and you say, hey, I saw this on Amazon for this price. And they say, okay, you know what? If it's the exact same model and it's the same thing that you can buy online, we don't want to lose you as a customer. We are willing to lower our price to that point. Well, a lot of us are not in a position where we have billions of dollars of revenue coming in to where that one discount is going to be a drop in the bucket. If you do 10 repairs a day and you have to discount each repair by 10%, then you have to say, one, I've got to figure out a way to make up for the profit that I'm now losing by offering that discount, or you have to accept a smaller profit, right? So what is the answer? Again, I'm not here to propose that answer to you, but more to put some attention on this question, because I get this, again, you know, all the time. And with the consumer having an attitude that, well, you know, everybody else price matches, you should too. Okay, so how does that work exactly? Where does that money come from? Would it be the same thing as me walking up to you and saying, hey, would you take some money out of your pocket and give it to me? Because ultimately, that's kind of what's happening, unless we're going to play the whole game where, oh, if we're going to negotiate, then I have to start my price up here because I know you're going to come down, you're going to come in down here, and I want to end up meeting right in the middle because that is my acceptable price. And if that's the way it works, that's fine. But be prepared to invest some time into that negotiating process. And believe me, I am all for negotiating if and when you can. There's no problem with that. But we have to also recognize that we are investing our time, and at a certain point, it may not be profitable for you to continue operating at that rate. So this was another thing that, another point that was brought up in a recent discussion I had about this, and that is when you first start your business, there is a temptation a lot of times to focus on nothing but price. And this is kind of the other facet of this whole discounting and no fix, no fee and anything along those lines where you say, well, you know, the number one important thing is price. You know, that immediately puts you into a category of people who are selling a commodity. We all do exactly the same thing. Therefore, the only way that we can compete is by offering a lower price. And if your market is completely saturated and your customer's perception is, I don't care about anything but the price, then I understand. A lot of times you have to play that game. And my suggestion would be, if you have the option, look for a different location, a different market, a different strategy, you know, better parts, whatever it is, because I know that there are some areas, and I hear these comments from a lot of people. They say, you know, my market is so competitive, and I thought that if I was going to open a business in a big city, I was going to do nothing but prosper. And here's the crazy thing about this. Everything that I've heard, every indication that I have from outside of my own business is that some of the most successful people in phone repair nowadays are the ones who are operating in less populated areas where their customers don't have 20 repair shops, you know, within a 10 square mile area. So something to consider, and I've heard this from several people, and hopefully some of them may be watching now, but opening up shop, I would look more at location based on competition than I would for population density, because what's happened is over the years, and yes, things were a lot different 5 or 10 years ago, but more recently, we see that areas that are densely populated are becoming so saturated that it's very difficult to operate in. So how do we make the customers pay for quality repairs in our shop rather than pay cheap on the shop where they're used to cheap parts? Great question. So obviously we can't make anyone do anything, but in order to encourage them to do business with us is the real challenge. And the short answer to that is that in some cases, you won't be able to do anything, okay? You are obviously going to have a certain customer who says, you know what, I did it down the street for $65 last time, or at least that's what they remember, and I've got an ad right here in front of me on Facebook or somewhere else, and this guy's offering this price. And anything that you tell that customer about quality or warranty, you know, anything that we feel is important to our business, that may not be important to the customer. So the first thing we have to do is figure out, you know, why, what is it that is driving this customer to say price, price, price? You know, I have to have the best price. Because if we dig a little deeper, and this is what I always encourage people to do for a couple of reasons. One, we don't want to be an order taker. Okay. The number one piece of advice I give people is please don't go into this business thinking that you're going to answer the phone, quote a price, and hang up, and then the customer is going to come in and bring you money, because it's not working like that, especially when we have a very competitive market. So for two reasons, I recommend that you get as much information and as much rapport with that customer as you can, because number one, if we find out that that customer doesn't care about the quality of the repair because they're about to turn their phone in at Verizon or Sprint or whoever has an upgrade program at that given moment, then the quality of the part, you know, any sales pitch that we have about our professionalism, the quality of our parts, our warranty, that's not a factor. So we need to determine immediately, does the customer care about the long-term effects of the phone? Number two, by digging a little deeper and getting that information, now we're having a conversation, okay? If you said, hey, how much do you charge for this? And I say $99. What do you know about me and what do I know about you? The only thing you know is my price. You don't know how long I've been in business, where I get my parts from, what my warranty is, that I care about your device. All you're hearing is that number. So if I can establish something, if I said, hey, Alien Fix, let me just ask you a quick question. You have an iPhone 6S. What happened exactly? You know, does it look like the frame is bent or is it just the glass? Is the touchscreen still working? Give me a few details. You know, I want to know what we're working with. You know, especially if I know that if I say, you know, if you have an iPhone 6 Plus, we want to make sure that the frame isn't bent. I don't know if you've heard about touch disease, but there's an inspection that we like to do on the phone before we proceed with the repair because of this known issue. So if I can convey a couple of things, one, that you're not just a number to me. You're not just some guy on the phone that I'm trying to say, hey, come down, I'm going to give you a great price. You know, what I'm saying is, look, I'm familiar with your device, number one, and I'm huge on product knowledge. The more that you know about the customer's device, the better. That's why I am using, and people make fun of me, I'm using an Android and an iPhone, because I should at least be able to relate to the comments in the questions that the customer has about not only the repair, but how to use their phone, and, you know, what's the best option, and which phones are out now, and what what kind of software and, you know, why is my processor running slow all of a sudden? So I want to be able to demonstrate that product knowledge. But more importantly, I want to be able to demonstrate an interest in the customer's device. Like, what's really going on with this? I want to give you a thorough inspection. And I would be happy to say, come down and we'll give you a free estimate and let you know what's going on with it, what the outcome is. I realize there are some people that just say, hey, just get to the price. That's all I want. And those are going to be the people who are telling you right away. As soon as they hang up with you, they're going to go to the next number on the list and say, hey, I just talked to Alien Fix Phone Repair and he said $99. How much can you do it from? And it's going to be very difficult to sell against that type of customer because they already have one thing in mind, and that is that price is the only thing that matters. But there is something to be said for, you know, having a reputation and also educating the customer. And it's difficult to do that on the phone. So this is the real challenge that we have is when someone walks into the store, we have more of a captive audience. You know, they're not going to walk and say how much, you know, lean in the door, ask your price, and then walk out as soon as they hear the number. They're going to come in. It's going to be air conditioned. Hopefully, you know, it'll be nice inside. There'll be a pleasant environment. You know, if you have, beverages, you know, those, one of the companies I work for right now, you come inside and they've got they have two reclining chairs sitting in front of a big screen TV with a movie playing, a snack bar. There's seriously Snickers and Pringles and water and sodas and all sorts of stuff. I mean, you go in there and you feel like you're getting the first class treatment as soon as you walk in the door. But on top of that, those employees are trained to establish rapport with the customer, to have a real conversation, to express some concern over what's really going on. I hope that makes sense, and I hope this is helpful. But this is something that really has to be practiced and trained for, you know, if you're not already good at doing it. I know that you've been somewhere before in your life where you dealt with a salesperson, and at some point you said, you know what, this person is just really cool to hang out. I'm being entertained. I feel comfortable with them. I've got rapport. You know, we like the same sports team. Whatever it is, there's something about that interaction where you go, you know what, I'm going to do business with this person, and that's what we're really after. At the same time, we can ask, you know, on the surface those questions about, let me ask you, you know, the guy down the street said $65 for this repair. Do you know how long the warranty is? And don't assume that the customer actually knows what that is. And this is one, this used to be one of my favorite techniques. I'd have a customer standing in front of me and they'd say, oh, well, this guy on Yelp or whatever, you know, his price is whatever amount. And it sounded like a ridiculous price, right? Like I'm going, how are they doing this repair for that amount of money? So I said, look, give me 1 second. What's the name of the business? And I would seriously put my phone on speaker, call up this company. Cause I at that point I kind of suspected I was being bluffed, and this is something that'll happen also. And, you know, customers will play one business against another. If I were shopping for a car, I'd probably do the same thing. You know, I'd probably go to the dealership and say, hey, this dealership told me this price. What can you do? Because that is a big part of a car sale, you know, is the negotiating process. You have to be able to go in there and play this game. I don't want to do that for a $50 price point item or a $99 price point item, but some people will. So I'll put my phone on speaker. I'll dial up that business so that the customer can hear the person answer, you know, XYZ phone repair on the other end. And then I say, hey, I've got an iPhone 6S. How much do you replace the screens for? And the guy says, oh, those are 115. And I say, oh, you know, I thought they were 60. Somebody told me $65. And a lot of times the guy on the other end of the phone will go, no, you know, that's for an iPhone 5. We do those for $65. And I say, okay, cool. You know, thanks. Appreciate your time. Click. And then the customer says, oh, you know, that's what it must have been last time I had, you know, last time I went there, I had this other phone. And there, that's not me making things up or saying, oh, I know that guy. You know, I'm not going to disparage another business and say they do crappy work, because the moment that I do that, I lose some credibility. You know, if I have to criticize the work of another business, not for everyone, but for a lot of customers, that is a real turnoff. You know, if all you can say about is something negative about your competition, you don't really have a lot of good to say, you know, nothing positive about your business. So I like to get the facts straight. First of all, are they really offering this repair for that amount of time? Okay, cool. How long is the warranty period? Is this an OEM part? And if I have a problem with it in a month and a half, what's going to happen? You know, where is your business located? Do I have to look you up on Craigslist again? Or do you have a real retail store where I can just walk in and same day you can swap out that part if it goes bad? And these are the things that we concentrate on. You know, if someone comes to me and says, hey, there's a place, and this is one of my favorite ones too. There is a business 30 minutes away from here and across a bridge that has a toll that will do this repair for $10 less. Will you match their price? No. Why would I match their price? Number one, The reason I can't match their price is because the rent they're paying in that location is far less than what I'm paying in my location. And if you knew the neighborhood I was talking about, you would understand why. So I'm okay with that. You know, if I have a very low overhead, I can reduce that net profit at the end because my expenses aren't going to be the same as the person who's operating in a building that has a $600 a month rent. You know, if mine's $2,700, for example, I can't match those prices. Number two, if you really want to make a round trip, 30-mile journey, go across a bridge with a toll, put $5 of gas in your car, and it's worth it to you somehow in the end to save that $10, then by all means, I understand, and I wish that I could help you. I'd love to be able to match that price, but it's not realistic for me to do that here. And this is the long answer. I'm giving you this information just to let you know where I'm coming from. I don't try to have this long conversation with the customer. I want to keep it as short and as easy to understand as possible. Sorry if I banged the mic there just now. I want to make this as short and easy for them to understand as I can. And I say, look, you know, if I was over there, I would be at that price too, because their overhead is much lower. Number two, we do give you a one-year warranty. Any problem with the part that we installed on your phone that's not caused by physical abuse, we'll replace it. No questions asked. We'll have you in and out the same day. We keep the parts on the shelf right here. Here are our business hours. We've been in business for X amount of time. You know, I've been doing this for a long time. So, not everyone can say that they've been fixing phones for the same amount of time that I have, but the longer that you've been working in this industry, the better, because you kind of see these things come and go and you get an idea of how people are doing it. And you see that, you know, a year and a half or so ago, we had all these iPhone 6 screens coming out of China where they had figured out a way to shave off a few dollars, you know, somehow by changing the glue or a few cents or whatever it was. And we had these super cheap iPhone 6 screens that were just permeating the market. And then all of a sudden they started falling apart because the glue didn't hold up. Well, we take a good look at our parts and our vendors and we know what we're getting. And if I can convey that value to the customer, and here's another tip. We would keep any really bad repair jobs that came in, the leftover parts. So if someone said, you know, I had my phone fixed at this other location and it was garbage and here it is, you know, you can see the phone, you know, things glitching out, the frames popping off, whatever. I hold on to those parts because when I have the customer in the store, I say, oh, you know, $65 iPhone 7 screen or, you know, 20, whatever it is now, they're getting ridiculous, right? So I say, hey, $45 iPhone 7 screen, let me show you what those look like, because we actually had some of those come in. Now, again, I'm not going to say it came from that specific business down the street, but I do want to let them have an idea of what they can expect for that price. So here is the $45 screen and here is the $75 screen. So which one do you prefer? Let me know. And most of the time they'll look at it and say, oh, well, you know, I don't want garbage. I just want to pay the garbage price. You know, that's usually the reaction. But of course, you know, at some point they're either going to realize that that's realistic or it's not, or they're going to hopefully convey that it doesn't matter. And that's the real question that I try to ask. How long do you plan to own this phone? This might be a very nice shortcut into responding to the customer that says, hey, this person down the street can do it for this. Why can't you do this lower price than him? And I might just ask point blank, how long do you plan on using this phone? So that might be an easy way to establish some interest from their perspective where they go, wait a minute, why is he asking me that? You know, and then we can lead into, well, you know, we have parts that are made to last for a year, and that's why we're able to warranty them for a year. And there are parts that are not made to last for a year or 6 months or 90 days. And there's a reason that those are priced the way that they are. So hopefully that helps to respond to that. Now, again, when it's a telephone call, it's much more difficult because your window of opportunity is small. You know, you definitely want the person who answers the phone to be able to establish rapport as soon as possible. You know, if you have someone who doesn't have good telephone skills, it's going to be challenging. You know, it's going to be difficult to get to that level of communication with the customer if you're just not a phone person. So there's no, you know, it's either learn how to deal with people on the phone or hire someone to answer the phone who's good at doing that. I had a salesman who worked for me who could charm anyone. I mean, the guy was amazing. He spoke 7 different languages. Everything that came out of his mouth was entertaining. He had an accent, which was just added to the whole entertainment value, you know, because he had this really interesting accent. And the moment people heard him talk, they're going, wait a minute, what is it? You know, what is this accent? I don't recognize it. It's very, you know, it's very different from anything else I've ever heard. And then he had his routine. I mean, he literally from A to Z, for any situation that might come up, he had a joke. And they were good jokes. So I don't recommend, if humor isn't your thing, then you should find a different technique. But by all means, if you're entertaining and funny and people love to hear you talk, then use that, because that immediately gets people from, okay, I'm talking to someone who's going to give me a price, to I am talking to a real human being. And we want to do that as fast as we possibly can, because again, people don't have a lot of time for chit chat on the phone, right? So I ask a couple of questions usually. Hi, this is my repair business. How can I help you? And then, of course, the response is usually, oh, is this such and such business that you just said? Yes, it is. And do you repair phones? Well, I said phone repair in the answer, but yeah, we do. But obviously, I don't tell them that. But that's another inside joke. You'll usually hear the same questions over and over and over all day. So yes, we do repair that phone. What happened? Okay, so instead of saying, hey, I can repair that screen for $99, I say, oh, you have a broken iPhone 7 screen. What happened? And then I'll usually trigger that mechanism that is, whoa, hold on. We just went from logical sort of to a more emotional, because usually that image is in the customer's mind. How did the phone break? Oh, man. You know, I was bending over to grab something. I just got out of the car and I forgot that I had the phone in my shirt pocket. Or I stood up and it was in my front pocket and it got smashed between the door. You know, that immediately changes the state of mind that the customer's in. You know, first we were doing research. Okay, I got to call and find out how much this is going to cost. And now I've been brought back to, and I understand it's a negative emotional state, but at the same time, this still builds that rapport to a certain extent, because now you're asking a customer to recall an emotional memory and they say, oh man, here's what happened. Here's what I should have done different. You know, and I say, you know what works good for that? Number one, these tempered glass we have, they're awesome, because if your phone goes face down, it usually breaks the glass instead of the screen. Or, you know, I know the OtterBoxes are big and bulky, but they are the most protective. And I usually get a response like, you know what? I always have my case on. I just happened to take it off at that point in time. Now we're having a conversation. Okay, now we are two people talking about finding out what the solution to this problem is, instead of, I need a number. Okay, here's the number. Great, bye. Let me call the next guy and compare his number to your number. Because if you put yourself into that category, then that means the only thing that you have to offer is a bid. You know, you might as well be at an auction saying, okay, here's my price. Here's my price. And if you're dealing with government organizations, a lot of times that's what you have to do, because they don't care how nice of a person you are or how good you are at your job. A lot of times it has to do with budget and what they're willing to spend, and the lower bid, you know, the lowest bid gets the contract. So that's kind of an exception to this rule. But when we're dealing with real people, most of the time, they want to deal with someone that they feel comfortable with. And I'll give you another great example of this. Same guy I mentioned earlier, in the area that we worked in, we had a lot of customers who were Spanish speaking. And the thing that always frustrated me is that I don't speak Spanish. A lot of people will assume that I do, so they'll try to speak to me in Spanish, and I'll immediately have to say no habla, or, you know, my really lame attempt at trying to small talk, which is minimal. Like, I have a few words. But this guy that spoke seven languages could talk to just about anybody that walked into the store. So this customer would come in and say, hey, is there some, you know, habla español? And I'll say no. And they look around like they're trying to find someone, you know, español. Does someone speak Spanish? And I'll say, hold on a second. And I go get this guy, and he's immediately blah, blah, blah. Everybody's laughing. Next thing you know, they're filling out paperwork, getting the job done. And initially I was put off by this, because I thought, you know, I can help this customer. You know, the funny thing was, they would walk in and say, is this person here? And I, you know, they would communicate that to me. Something is thought, I can't remember the exact phrase, but they would say his name and I'd say, no, you know, he's off today. He'll be back tomorrow. And they would say, okay. And they would turn around and walk out the door. But usually they would say something along the lines of, all right, I'll come back tomorrow. So all of a sudden I realized this customer does speak English, but they are more comfortable speaking Spanish because that is their native language. So they are willing to wait a day to come back and speak to someone who will communicate to them in their native language. So this is the real part of the people aspect of this business. It's not just a matter of, okay, you need to convey information to me and I need to convey information to you. It is, my customer wants to deal with someone they feel comfortable with, and our task is to accommodate them in that manner. Again, with exceptions. You know, there are some people who are going to take the lowest price, and that's all there is to it. And if you want to open yourself up, and this is the thing that I'm very skeptical about, and that is keeping second-rate parts on hand, because you really want to say, oh, you want, you know, the Craigslist quality or whatever we want to call it. And I hate to pick on any, you know, I know people do business through a variety of avenues here. So I don't want to say mall quality or Craigslist quality or Starbucks lobby quality or whatever. But, you know, if someone does a very low quality, uses low quality parts in their repairs, I could say, okay, is that what you're after? Do you want the lowest priced option with no guarantee on it? And you can offer that option if you want to put your name on it. That's the real reservation I have about this, because again, the one thing that the customer is going to remember in the end is where they got their phone fixed. Not the conversation that you had about it, not where you told them that, okay, I can only put a 30-day warranty on it because we're going as cheap as we possibly can, you know, to match someone else's price, and I'm giving you inferior equipment. All that stuff goes out the window. The one thing that sticks in their head is the name of your business, and your reputation is what's on the line. So if they're not happy, and I've had this happen more than once, not more than twice, because after the second time, I'm done with it. You know, when someone says, oh, can you do this cheaper? Can you do this cheaper? And I said, well, you know, I really can't. You know, it's a slow day, but, you know, I've got other stuff on the table that I get to. Well, you know, can you please help me? And I don't care if this goes wrong or this works or it doesn't last and blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay, you know what? You got to keep in mind, though, I can't put a warranty on this because this is really not the proper fix. This is not what you need, but I'm trying to help you out because I know you're in a jam. Perfect example, this happened with a laptop where someone had a charge port that was broken out of the laptop on the inside. Okay, so they yanked the cord too many times or whatever. And it was a pretty basic soldering job. The only problem was the hinge on the laptop was destroyed. I mean, there was nothing there. Like, you couldn't close it, you couldn't open it, it just had to stay where it was. So if you can imagine, taking this thing apart was not the easiest thing in the world, but this poor girl had to get her homework off of the laptop because it was due by Monday and she wasn't going to be able to get a new laptop and there was no way to extract the data and there was no hard drive adapter that we could plug it into at the time. I said, look, you know, I don't normally do this. I would never put my name on something like this, because the problem was there was no real way to reinforce the charge port. There was nothing left to attach it to because the hinge was so destroyed and the inside, you know, the parts inside, there's nothing there. I said, look, I can get it back together, plug it in, charge your battery up for you, and you can get your homework off of here. And, you know, the moment you unplug the charge port, it's gone. It's not going to charge anymore because it's going to tear the wires right off and there's no way for me to reinforce. Oh, no problem. I don't care. I just have to get this off for my classes, blah, blah, blah. You know, I said, okay. So you have to also understand this is going to take a significant amount of labor for me to get this thing installed. So I have to charge you accordingly. So I had to charge, you know, basically ended up charging her the regular price for a laptop charge port repair job where we soldered the old port back in. And so she took it. She was happy as can be. Went home. You know, I reminded her on the way out of the door, you know, this thing isn't made to last. There is no warranty. I can't give you a warranty. It's not going to be good. If the moment you plug this out, oh, I don't care. I just need to get my homework and I'm good because my test next week or whatever it is. And so, of course, a week later, she comes back complaining because her charge port broke. Well, you know, I told you it wasn't going to hold up. Yeah, but I didn't know it was going to break this fast. I'm just not satisfied. And what do you do at that point? So when we have businesses that offer these very low cost solutions, we can say, you know, it's going to be hard to stay in business that for very long when you're doing something like that. But if someone is there for a long time and they keep doing it that way and they're still successful, then we want to question why. And this is another thing that comes to mind for me is, you know, I'd like to sit back and just say, oh, you know, if you don't run your business properly, you won't last. And then I see people who have been in business for a long time and they don't do anything near what I would call quality or a high degree of customer service or anything like that. I'm going, how do these guys stay in business? Well, you know, good or bad, there seems to be an endless supply of customers who are taking their phone in for a first-time repair. So I think that that's where they're getting their customers from. And they're not going to be repeat customers, but there's going to be a whole new generation of customers next month that have never seen that business and aren't familiar with the kind of work that they do or that they can expect from them. So again, good or bad, we'll see what happens. I suspect strongly, though, that as we all know, when it comes to phones, especially Apple and Samsung, with things becoming more complicated and much easier to damage and having Apple stores and Samsung vans or whatever around, we're going to see a lot of people fall off. You know, people who jumped into this business thinking it was going to be easy money and realize that it isn't, who are going to either try to sell their businesses or look for something else to do because, you know, the gold rush is over. It's not something that you jump into and you get rich overnight with anymore, definitely. All right, so let me see. I think I have gotten through most of what I had planned. Let me jump back here and make sure that I don't know what happened last week. I had a problem, and for some reason, my audio was terrible. So I think I had the sound settings on here incorrect. I'm going to try to leave this one up. I took the one from last week down and re-uploaded it after I had re-edited it so that it would sound better, because I just can't stand like knowing that someone's going to listen to something that sounds that crappy for some reason. That's a weird thing about me. Let's see. What was this? Oh, and by the way, this, you've probably seen this before, but this is like my favorite meme, and I really think I'm going to have this printed up and post it like in store, because every time I see that argument, here was probably another short answer to your question, Alien Fix, and that is, if you put up a poster like this in your store and someone says, hey, I can get it cheaper somewhere else, you could just point them here, you know, and that might be an easy answer to that one. Okay, so that is it for today. What I'm going to do is I'm going to put that screen back up. Because of this delay, last week I cut some people off, so I didn't realize there were comments still coming in, and I ended the stream before it was actually over. So I am going to keep the stream open to answer comments if anyone has any for about the next 5 minutes, because I don't want anyone to feel like I'm not answering their questions. In fact, what I might do in that meantime is jump over here and answer some questions that I haven't gotten to yet. Actually, I know I'm lagging on this, but my YouTube stuff here. Let's see, is this going into the browser? Yeah, I think it is. Okay, so you can see that. So in case anyone's answering or wondering, and this is probably more questions for customers and do-it-yourselfers than it would be for anyone who is already in experienced tech, but let's see, iPhone 6 front camera. So if my front camera and speaker isn't working, then I need a replacement. Yes, probably. Most likely you have a problem with that piece of equipment or the area that it plugs into the phone on. You might have a front camera failure caused by something else, but the fact that, oh, wait a minute, you said the speaker. Yeah. You might have a component that fails on its own due to something other than the modular component itself. You know, you might have a front-facing camera that doesn't work because you have a different issue on the logic board or in your software or somewhere else. But if your front camera and your earpiece speaker don't work, I would say yes, more than likely you need to replace that part. You probably tore the cable or they're bad. Those things tend to be very fragile. Where is the speaker connected to the phone system? This is for an iPhone 5S. Where is the speaker connected to the phone system? Down at the bottom. So on the charging port flex. Okay, my sound has gone after the charger port. After I replaced the charge port. Yeah, there are two little gold connectors on the backside of the speaker at the bottom. If they are bent and they don't line up or they become compressed, they won't make contact anymore. Also, that cable is very easy to tear when you're removing it. But if you replaced it, I would not suspect that that's your problem, because it's kind of hard to tear it while you're installing it. But still, you might want to take a magnifier and get a good close look all the way around the perimeter of that cable and make sure none of the edges are torn or damaged. And of course, there's always a possibility that you have a bad part, because that happens too. Wow, HTC One. I have a question on HTC One M7. It blows my mind that this phone is still around and people are still working on them. Is it normal if prior to replacing the back cover, sound only comes out of the top left earpiece, whatever you want to call it, speaker, when pressure is applied to the speaker? Will the back cover apply the appropriate amount of pressure when it's reinstalled? I don't think so. I haven't worked on that phone forever, but I don't think that the back panel, I'm gonna have to get back to you on that one. I don't think the back panel is required to have sound from the speaker, at least not that I remember. So I will have to dig through and come back and answer that later on, because I really don't know. But I wouldn't think so. Let's see. Let me pull. Oh, this is good. Okay. So let's see. Greetings from San Antonio, Texas. Hey, greetings to Triton 382. So how important is it to do microsoldering in a cell phone repair shop? Also, do you suggest to pay for courses for it? Yes. No, for courses. I know that's what you meant, but that's funny. How important is it to do microsoldering in a cell phone shop? Let me ask you this. Do you currently have a shop? That question is going to be dependent on a number of different factors. I would say if you plan on staying in this business, I would definitely look into microsoldering. At a minimum, you should be able to do charge ports and, real basic stuff like backlight filters on iPad minis, which I have one here that I'm working on, actually. Believe it or not, iPad mini too, bad backlight. Charge ports, touch ICs, I don't think you have to worry about too much anymore, but there's a lot of problems right now with the iPhone 6. Okay, so you are in a shop. The iPhone 6S is going through a lot of problems with the backlight system right now, mainly because, in many cases, because the phone is repaired with the battery still attached, and that causes a problem because the voltage that feeds into the backlight system sits right next to another pin where if it touches those two pins on the pop connector together, if they bridge, these two little pins that are right next to each other, it causes the backlight filter to ground and the whole thing, one or two of the capacitors in that system will burn up and it can cause other damage in that system. And as you know, when you go to plug those pop connectors in, it's kind of hard to line them up. So a lot of times people end up bridging those two connectors together. So I would say this, if you are thriving in the screen repair business right now, I wouldn't worry about it right away, but I would say in the near future, especially if you're in a competitive market, that micro soldering can make a big difference. It can open up a huge number of opportunities, not only with customers, but also with other phone repair shops. So there are plenty of people out there who are doing screen repairs and they're replacing charge ports and batteries and so forth, and they're doing fine. They're happy where they're at. But when it comes to something they can't do, they need to have someone nearby that they can send those repairs to. I would go as far as to say that if you become proficient with micro soldering and troubleshooting logic boards, that you could do nothing but that. And you could immediately go out to other businesses and say, hey, I will offer you dealer cost. And this is what I do in some situations. I'll offer you dealer cost on a micro soldering repair so that you can still service your customer. You don't lose that person. You don't say, oh, we can't help you, you have to go somewhere else. You say, oh, you know what? We actually have a guy who does micro soldering for us that we're contracted with, and we'll handle everything. We do the paperwork here, and when the phone is done, we'll get back to you. Or, they say, hey, I need somebody to come down and do this repair. It's an emergency, And if you're able to do that, you'll have a lot more opportunities, I think, depending on what market are you in, out of curiosity, if you don't mind me asking. Is phone hardware upgrades, increased storage a real thing? There's this YouTube channel, Rewa, that's supposedly doing this. Yes, that on iPhones, there is, this is a crazy thing. So I want to say about a year and a half or so back, they figured out that Apple really did not save a whole lot of money by making a 32 gig iPhone 6, was it a 16? I think they had a 16 gig, right? They had a 16 gig iPhone 6, which is nuts. Why would you have that? And a 128. And the difference in cost on the memory was not that significant. And these guys, they figure out the most amazing things. You can actually remove the chip where basically the memory capacity is controlled by that chip. And then there's some software that has to go into it. You can get a 128 chip and you can program in the serial number, because as you know, with iPhones, everything's got to match up. You have like three or four different components that are all tied together. So the serial number, the IMEI, all the stuff has to be consistent. So you would need the replacement chip, the equipment to remove the old one. And then you need this, I'm going to go blank on the name right now, but they have a piece of hardware that you put the new chip onto, and it programs that chip to match up with the information on that phone. And then you install that chip onto the phone and it upgrades the memory. So that is absolutely a real thing. Is it practical to do here? I don't know of anyone who does that. So I'm guessing you'd probably have to ship it to China and back to get it done. I may be wrong on that. There might be some people in the US that do, but yeah, it's definitely a real thing. And when you have a 16 gig phone, it's something you almost have to, because by the time you put the latest OS, iOS on an iPhone 6 that's 16 gigs, you don't have a lot of memory left to work with. So we're in North Carolina. Oh, cool. So you're in the same state where the lady walked into the Sprint store with the automatic rifle. That's crazy. Let me know if you hear anything about that, because I'm dying to know the details. The article really didn't say all that much about it. There's only three shops around. Actually, I had a couple students from North Carolina, as a matter of fact, that came out a few years ago. There's only three shops around, so we'll be the only ones doing micro soldering. Yeah, I would say, at least in the short term, you should be able to get a lot of work if you can do, for example, iPhone 6S backlight. Let's see, what else? You know, really, once you get into micro soldering, and if you have the right equipment and you are proficient with it, it opens up a lot of other opportunities. One of the biggest ones I'd say that I was, you know, kind of had my eyes open to recently was the PlayStation 4 HDMI ports. Those things apparently have been notorious for breaking. And, you know, a lot of times kids likes to move their console from one room to the next. And if you remember back in the day, they had the Xbox 360 Red Ring of Death. Well, with the PS4, it's the HDMI port that becomes damaged. And once that does that, you have no video output signal. So if there's no one else doing micro soldering in your area, number one, I guarantee there are tons of people with game consoles out there that are probably shipping them off right now to be repaired. And if you talk to the average gamer, they will more than likely just go buy another game system instead of try to ship their PS4, you know, a couple days out and wait a couple days for it to come back. So if you can offer that repair, I think the going rate right now is about $100, and the parts, the HDMI ports are probably like $2 a piece. And if you're interested, I'll actually put a link down at the bottom. There's another channel called Tronics Fix, and this guy has the best PS4 HDMI ports I've ever seen. In fact, I'll credit him on this video because he's really good. He does excellent tutorials on game console systems. And anytime it comes to a game console, I'll generally default to his channel or another guy, Andrew Paul. I think it's Andrew Paul. There's another guy that does almost nothing but game consoles, and he's awesome. He's out of the UK. And he has an entertaining accent also. But yeah, I would look into that kind of thing. You can start doing, you know, if you can get in and out of a phone following a tutorial, I would encourage you to explore laptops also. Definitely game consoles. Getting back to the PS4, $2 part, probably about 30, 40 minutes of labor, you know, total from tearing it down. So you've got to be able to open the thing up. And I think the going rate's about $100. And really, if you're the only game in town, you don't have to worry about people lowballing you and doing really cheap, crappy repairs and then having to upsell to better quality, which is what you'll be offering, hopefully. You will have to get some equipment. And by the way, I really wanted to be able to connect my other camera and kind of point you around the room so I could show you what I'm working with, because I've had some people asking about micro soldering stuff, and this is going to be difficult to do. I'm actually going to grab this and bring it over here because my microphone isn't going to travel with me. I'm going to show you first what I used to use, okay? And I'm not saying that you should, but I do want to show you. This is what I had before, okay? This is a cheap hot air / soldering station, okay? Now, it's nothing fancy. For the most part, the hot air will... I've used this hot air to do just about anything that I've ever done on an iPhone before. I've done Touch IC with this. I've done charge ports on Galaxy S6s, S7s. I've used this hot air for all sorts of stuff. You know, to a certain extent, hot air is hot air. The soldering station itself is not that great, and they don't tend to last very long. So you usually get a year or two out of these, and then you have to replace them. But they're cheap. They're like $75, and you get everything built into one. Of course, you're not going to get the consistency that you would with something higher end. Now, one second. Let's see. What was that? Oh, yeah, they're selling them on eBay for cheap. Yeah, well, that's the thing. Here's a good thing about eBay, and that is we don't really have to worry about competing with eBay, because you will have a customer who... if they care about nothing but price and they're willing to ship their phone or their game console off to Florida to get it fixed, that's not a customer that you want. You know, that is not a customer that is going to be profitable for you in the long run. So I'm happy to have people say, oh yeah, they do this on eBay for $30. Okay, well, you know, have fun not having a phone until it comes back, or a game console or whatever else. When I go to 7-Eleven, I'm going to pay more for a beverage than I would if I went to Costco, right? But I'm going to be in and out. I'm going to get it now, and I'm willing to pay for that convenience. And also, I'm going to get the same quality product. Now, when you send something off, I'm not sure what we're getting here when their net profit is, you know, a few dollars for a microsoldering job. I don't know exactly what they're getting, but fortunately, we don't. You know, I don't have customers come into my store and say, I can send my phone off to eBay to get it serviced for this cheap. I do have people say they can get the part really cheap on eBay, and then we have to have that explanation about what you're actually getting for the money. And for that reason, I'll keep these parts. You know, if you remember the old, it's just a piece of glass, right? So people will come in with a piece of glass that will fit on their iPhone, and they'll say, oh, it's just a piece of glass, you know, it's just like $10 to install, right? Okay. I'll bring out the LCD and show them what they're getting and what the piece of glass is. And in many cases, they'll say, oh, well, you can keep that piece of glass. I can't do anything with it. Well, I keep those on the shelf. So when people come in and say, oh, I saw this online for cheap, I say, yeah, here's what you saw for cheap. I'm happy to sell you this one even cheaper. If you want it, you can have it right now. I'm not going to install it for you, because if you really want to see what that's like, I have a video to point you to that you can fit, you know, it's an hour long if you want to see the process for installing just the glass, but here's what I can give you today. But yeah, they get crazy with the prices on eBay. But again, that comes at a cost, and it's not something that we really have to worry too much about competing with, because most people don't want to send their phone off. Most of my customers don't want to leave their phone in the store for an hour. You know, they don't want to leave. It's almost like this is really bad, but one of my old coworkers, we had someone come in and say, hey, can you fix my phone? And she had a baby in a little, you know, little baby carriers. I don't even know what they call them, but, you know, carry the baby around in. It's probably 6 months old. She comes in, sets her baby on the floor, brings the phone, puts it on the counter and says, hey, how much is it to fix this screen? And I give her the price and everything. She says, oh, okay, hold on a second. I need to run out to my car. She grabbed the phone off the counter, ran out the door, and left the baby on the floor. Like, I'm just going, you would rather leave your child here unattended than your phone on the counter. So, yeah, I don't know what that's about. In any case, if you do, you know what? I'm going to have to do a better tour of this one of these days, because this isn't really going to do it justice. But I would say, if you're thinking about buying microsoldering equipment, one quick 861DW, this hot air station, I am loving. I upgraded to this specifically for the PS4 HDMI ports, because the station that I had before, which I told you it's low end, it's very cheap. It was getting the job done for most hot air tasks. But when it comes to the PS4 HDMI ports, the melting point on those things is ridiculous. Okay. And not on top of that, the board itself, the motherboard inside the PS4, is designed to dissipate heat as quickly as possible, because as you know, those things get really hot, especially when you have the power supply built inside of the console. So those things are very difficult to heat up enough with that factory solder that they put on there. So I upgraded to this thing, and it is awesome. I'm not going to go into too much detail, because I do want to do a complete tour of the equipment that I'm using here at home eventually, but I would recommend you look into this. They're awesome. However, a lot of people figure that out, and I ordered that I think in April, and it took 2 months to get here because they sold out, because a bunch of people found out how cool this hot air station is. So if I find a link, I'll put it down in the bottom. I think it's, what is the company called? Jeez, I'm going to have to look it up. But hot air, you'll be amazed at how much micro soldering actually involves hot air rather than just a soldering iron. So definitely be prepared, or have some good quality hot air in hand, because you will need that. And start doing some practicing. I am going to put together a tutorial that just kind of shows some things that you can do to practice micro soldering, because you don't have to have logic boards on hand to practice micro soldering. There are all sorts of leftover spare parts you have in your shop that you can start practicing on right now without any risk. You don't have to worry about breaking anything. So I'm going to be doing some tutorials on that too. I am definitely not a master micro solderer, but I'm getting better, and I can get a lot of the more common repairs done. There are people way better than me that have their own channels, whoops, that I will also credit eventually. I ended up buying the Hakko FM203. I don't know if you can see it back there, but I like this one because it's got dual ports. Oh, getting back to the hot air station, I want to say it was about $200. I think it was like $170. And then I bought all sorts of tips because I just wasn't sure what I was going to need. So all these tips, they're a couple bucks a piece. They're not much. The station itself, though, is only like a couple $100. I think I want to say it was like $170 plus shipping. So about $200 something altogether. But this is, I love the way this works. Obviously, you don't do this while it's hot, but you just pop these things off. And they're on there pretty solid, but you just pull them off the end. And then when you want to switch the tips, push it on if you need to. Ah, it's hard to get it aligned for some reason once in a while, but they kind of snap into place sooner or later. There we go. This soldering station, the reason I went with the FM203 is because it's got dual ports, and I'm kind of impatient when it comes to soldering. I don't like to sit around and wait for the soldering tips to cool off. So what I used to do is I would take one of these. This is like an oven or barbecue glove, basically, and I'd use this to take the tips off, which is probably not a good idea because I'm probably contaminating the tips with all sorts of crap that's going to make them not very effective. But I was trying to get in and out as fast as possible. Well, with this, you can actually plug in two separate soldering irons. You know, you can have your main iron and a secondary one with a different size tip. Or you can get, let's see if I get this out here. You can get these micro tweezers, which are actually kind of cool too. They're probably not as cool as you think they are. That was my impression. Because what you have is two separate elements that heat up on both sides. So if you're pulling a component off of a logic board, like a capacitor, or resistor, or something that has two separate connections, as you can imagine, having one soldering iron can make that somewhat challenging. Well, the idea was that the tweezers would make that easy because you just grab both sides of the component where it's soldered down and you just lift it up. Well, what I found out quickly was that even at maximum heat, there are a lot of components built onto the iPhones that don't just heat off real easily, especially the parts that are grounded. It's like they use some kind of heavy, I don't know what it is, but it's often very difficult to get them off. So don't expect any miracles from it. It is a nice piece of equipment to have. I think it's kind of overrated, honestly, but that's probably a limitation of my skill set. So I could probably be better at using the micro tweezers, but most of the time I'll end up using hot air for a great majority of the work that I do. I feel fairly proficient with the hot air. Once you get it tuned in, you can actually program this thing also. So I've got three different settings that this will program. So I just hit one button if I'm melting, that underfill and I'm trying to scrape it away. I have one low setting with one airflow for that. I have one super high setting for when I'm trying to remove shielding. And then I have one in the middle that I kind of adjust basically based on what I'm working with. So yeah, and I'll double check that price for you, but I want to say it's about $200 and definitely worth the money. Probably the best investment I've made when it comes to micro soldering equipment, I think would be this hot air station. That thing, it rocks. And there's probably something, this is probably a bare minimum, but for what it does for the price, yeah, you should make that up in a few repairs easily. Okay, I think I've probably gone long enough here. And hopefully I've given everyone enough time for questions and comments. I'm going to cut this off here in just a second. I'm going to actually stop talking and switch back to a still. And I'll keep this going just for a few minutes. If anyone has any last minute questions, I am happy to hopefully answer them. And otherwise, I'm going to shut the camera off so I don't have to worry too much about where the computer is pointed. And then I'm going to extract this audio and upload it to the podcast. So if you missed any of this and you don't need to actually watch it, if you go to gocellphonerepair.com/podcast, I have a library of information for stuff that we've talked about over almost the last year. I've got almost 50 total episodes so far. We've had a lot of iPad Air charging port that need... Oh, you know what? I forgot. My chat doesn't show up the way I'm doing this. Give me one thing here. Give me one second here. I want to add the chat box to this still if I can. What is it called? Is it text? No. Oh, well. All right. So the question is, the statement was, we have a lot of iPad Air charging port that need micro soldering to repair. Oh, you know, I am actually getting ready to do one of those this week. And in fact, on the tutorials that I'll be making, I've got one that is how to hopefully avoid damaging the iPhone 7 home button when you remove it. I'll be uploading that probably today or tomorrow. I will be doing a replacement on an iPod Touch 6th generation speaker, and I'll also be doing what I believe is a much easier method of the iPad Air charge port. I don't know if it's a first or second gen. I'll have to check, but I think they're both Lightning, right? Yeah, if you have those that need micro soldering, that's probably a good place to start. And I would recommend that you buy the replacement parts, you know, buy a few of them and practice removing the actual port from the cable. Because if you can do that without any problems, you won't have to dig nearly as far into the device. So within the next couple days, I should have that repair posted. And thanks for everything. Thank you for participating. I really appreciate it. This is awesome. And I really love being able to interact with people and not just kind of talk at them. So thanks for showing up.